Just a few days on from the federal budget, and the government has this to say about the opposition leader.
Bill Shorten is unbelievable. He's unbelievable on every single promise he makes. His roll gold guarantees are not worth a cracker. They're not worth the paper they ever get printed on.
Roll gold. I'm not going to say it 30 times. Unbelievable. These are the kind of words the government's using. Well, the tax, well, specifically how much of it we all pay, is basically the epicentre of the political debate now. Taxation is now the centre of all of our debates around federal politics. Both sides of politics want us to pay less tax. So what is the best plan for the economy and for taxpayers? Saul Eslake has spent much of the week looking at it all, and he has his analysis. Saul, welcome to RN Drive.
Thank you for having me, Patricia.
So the government has its seven-year tax plan, and at its first phases, it does favour middle-income and lower-income Australians, but then, of course, critique around it going up. And then Labor has given us an alternative, at least, which focuses on the lower and the middle-income earners. How do you assess both these plans if you kind of look at them next to each other? We can only have one. We usually have one government.
Well, that's right. And of course, the government of today has access to all of the resources of the public service that allow it to put out in much greater detail than an opposition party can precisely how it proposes to change the tax scales, who will benefit from the changes it proposes to make, and how much the changes it proposes to make will impact the budget bottom line. Opposition parties are able now to access the Parliamentary Budget Office for advice on all of those costings, but it's up to the opposition parties to determine when they release all of the numerical detail that they have as a result of the assistance from the PBO. And so far, the Labor Party hasn't released a lot of those details. They will need to do that during the course of the election campaign, whenever it's held, or the government will justly be able to accuse them of hiding something. But at this stage, there's a lot that we don't know about the detail of the opposition's alternative tax plan. We obviously know the general flavour of it, and in particular, what the opposition would do with regard to, or how it would differ from, the first phase of the government's three-stage tax plan. We know that the Labor Party wouldn't go ahead with the changes to the, or the elimination of the middle, the second top tax bracket, the 37.5% tax bracket that the government proposes to eliminate from 2022 onwards. And as regards to the top rate, not only would they not raise it from 180,000 to 200,000 in 2024, as the government's proposing, but they in fact want to increase the top rate from 45 to 47%, or 49%, including the Medicare levy. Now, the opposition has also foreshadowed a series of what economists would call base broadening measures, that is curtailing negative gearing, reducing the capital gains tax discount, taxing trusts more than is presently the case in the hands of the principal income earner, and most recently abandoning the idea that people with franking credits that they can't use to offset their tax liabilities can get cash rebates for them. Those proposals will all raise a considerable amount of money. That's partly how Labor can promise to offer low to middle income earners bigger tax cuts than the government has done. The Labor Party also says they won't proceed with the government's proposed cut in company tax for companies turning over more than $50 million a year, which is likely to give them an extra $80 billion over the next 10 years. Some of that's clearly going to go to increased spending on hospitals, schools, vocational education, training and the like. But the Labor Party probably has more to offer by way of income tax cuts. I dare say between now and whenever the election is called, the government will be rolling out additional either spending promises or perhaps less likely additional income tax cuts. And ultimately, the people will make a value judgment at the next election as to which tax cut, which alternative program they prefer. And in many ways, it's perhaps worth emphasising that this is essentially a political choice. There's not much that economic analysis has to say about whether it's preferable to collect 24% of GDP in income tax for some smaller or larger amount, or whether it's better to collect more from high-income earners and less from low-income earners. There are some economic consequences of different choices, but more than anything else, it comes down to the value judgment that society places on equity considerations versus economic efficiency.
So that absolutely, we all know all budgets and choices are political, and of course this one is loaded in politics, as is the political response from Labor. Both of them are. It seems almost like an auction on income tax cuts. Labor's saying they're offering double that number than the government. I mean, they're saying, you know, under the government you get $500, we'll give you $1,000 essentially. Does that have any stimulatory kind of consequence on the economy if a whole bunch of those taxpayers are getting this extra amount? Can you argue that? Is there any basis in fact there?
Yes, you could argue that, although not for the year immediately ahead, because an important feature of what the government is proposing is that people won't see a reduction in the weekly deductions that are taken or fortnightly deductions taken from their pay packets, as if it would be the case if the government had changed the rate scales and lowered the 19 or 32.5% rates or increased the thresholds at which people start to pay those rates. Instead, as the Treasurer outlined in his budget speech, that reduction in tax is going to be paid through a new income tax offset, which people who are entitled to receive it won't actually receive it until they've filed their 2018-19 tax returns, and that means they won't get it until July or August of 2019. Now, Labor said they're going to match that, but just offer a bigger tax offset to people who are eligible for it. So unless people spend in advance of receiving it, there'll be no economic stimulus arising from this until the beginning of the 2019-20 financial year, and then there'll be a slightly bigger stimulatory effect over the following 3 years, and then perhaps a bigger one again when the second and third phases of the government's tax plan come in, if indeed they do, if the government succeeds in being re-elected, not only at this election, but the one after that, because there are two elections between now and when the government's plan is implemented in full, if it is. But in saying all of that, it's also important to remember that the Labor Party is proposing to fund the tax cuts it's offering to low to middle income earners by increasing the tax take from people higher up the income scale. Now, that means that there will be some offsetting impact from their policies if they are elected. Most economists would say that a dollar of tax cut given to a low to middle income household will have a bigger impact on the economy than a dollar of tax cut given to people higher up the income scale, because higher income households save some of their income, whereas low to middle income families typically spend every extra dollar that they get. And so in that sense, if you have a straight redistribution of income, which is not exactly what the Labor Party is proposing, but if you say that, for example, $50 billion worth of tax cuts to low to middle income households are funded in part by $50 billion of tax increases on high income households, then there would be a small net stimulatory impact from that. But overall, it wouldn't be very big. It would be more about redistributing income than boosting it.
The end of the government's tax plan will see an entire, as you've said, tax bracket removed from the system by 2024, and Labor is kind of complaining essentially about that, you know, flat tax. Now, the government's saying it's still progressive. We've heard the Prime Minister here, because people at the higher income level still pay more tax as a proportion. I mean, if you look at the percentage, they will pay more tax. But so how do you assess the critique of this? I mean, do you still see it as a progressive system? Is it fair to say it loses its progressiveness?
Well, it certainly would still be a progressive tax system, because the tax-free threshold of currently $18,000 and then the next two elements of the tax scale at which people's income is taxed at 19% and then at 32.5%, will still be a lower tax rate than people above that are paying on most of their income. So it is absolutely the case, if the government plan were to be entered into in full by 2024, that people on incomes of $200,000 or higher would be paying a higher proportion of their income in income tax than people whose incomes were, say, $100,000 or $150,000 per year, and they in turn would be paying a higher average rate of tax, a higher proportion of their income in personal income tax than someone on $40,000 or $50,000 per year. But the system would be less progressive for people over the second top tax threshold as it is at the moment. It's about to go to $90,000. It would be less progressive than it is at the moment. And so the argument is not really that we're going to a completely flat tax system whereby, for example, every dollar of income was taxed at 15 or 25%. We wouldn't even be going to as flat a system as New Zealand does, which has a much lower tax-free threshold than Australia and has a much lower top tax rate than Australia would under the government's plan if it were fully implemented. But it would certainly be less progressive. And so the argument is not, do we want a progressive tax system or not, because we're going to have one under either party's policy, but do we want one which is more or less progressive than the one which we have at the moment? And again, it's important to remember that Labor is proposing to broaden the income tax base in ways that would inevitably impact higher income earners, and especially higher income earners who arrange their affairs so as to receive their high incomes in forms that are not subject to the top tax rate. It would impact them more. And so Labor would argue that not only by not adopting the rate scale that the government's proposing, but also by some of the other base broadening measures that they're proposing, they would be making the system more progressive, whilst the coalition would be making the system less progressive than it is. But to characterise it as a flat tax system is, I think, not accurate.
Saul Eslake, thank you so much for your insights and a bit of clarity on what has been a loaded political week. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Patricia.
Saul Eslake is an independent economist. This is RN Drive. I'm Patricia Carvelis. We thought we'd go to somebody independent because, man, oh man, is this getting political. I mean, that's what happens, I suppose. It's budget, it's political, and then there's a budget reply, that's political, and then there's looming by-elections, a lot of politics there, and then maybe a general election. 0418 226 576. What's your assessment? You can also tweet us using the hashtag RNDrive.